Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Yes, welcome to another show. It is Shira and Ryan.
Ooh, it's me. I'm yes, Ryan.
I'm Shira.
Even though yesterday we had some, we had a guest on that like literally entered the I don't know if y'all noticed, she was like, hey, ladies.
Well, you know, you're queen.
First of all, I go by he, him pronouns.
That's true.
But, you know, I do say she, and I do sound like a she, her sometimes.
Which I never got because...
How do you not? Just... Well, it's because you're looking at me.
Yeah, even I'm trying to close my eyes and think. I just can't do
okay,
it.
Okay, close your eyes. Hi. Yeah. Hi, Shira. How you doing?
I mean, now...
My voice is higher than yours.
This day and age, though, with pronouns, like, I wouldn't, like, assume anything. But at the same time, like...
Act like we were in 2006.
I feel like you do sound like a
woman.
Guy. I do feel like you just sound like a guy with like a fun voice. It's like raspy and fun.
Oh God! Okay.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. It's hard to know. I'm too biased now.
Yeah,
anyway.
I think you are. I don't think it works with you anymore.
Anyway, we have a lot coming up in the show. More music, of course. Stick around for that. Plus, the teacher shortage that is sweeping the U.S. It's causing quite the concern during this back-to-school season. And is it time for another COVID booster? All those answers on the show today. Let's get into some what's trending this hour, though, right now. Alan Weisselberg, the former chief financial officer of the Trump Organization, pleaded guilty today to his role in a 15-year-long tax fraud scheme. And as part of the deal, he has agreed to testify against former President Donald Trump's real estate company at trial.
Woo!
Oh, this could get juicy.
This is wild.
I mean, maybe this is what we've been waiting
for. I know filmmakers are so ready to, like, make a movie about all of this. And it's just like, please, think about it. We don't need it. We're living it right now.
Already
we do not need to watch this 5 to 10 years from now. Please. No, thank you.
What is it, like the true American crime story or something?
Yeah,
like
Ryan Murphy, sit down. Put the pen down.
Yeah. Well, Judge Bruce Reinhart announced the possible public release of a heavily redacted version of the affidavit for the search at Mar-a-Lago. Prosecutors will have the opportunity to propose redactions and explain why each piece of information needs to be kept from the public eye. Those proposals will be due next Thursday. And here is attorney for ABC and the Wall Street Journal, Diana Schulman.
Can the government meet that burden? Can they show, for example, that releasing certain information contained in those materials would justify or severely impede the investigation, would cause the revelation of confidential informants or confidential witnesses, or somehow so hinder the investigation as to jeopardize the safety and security of it? I feel good about today's hearing. Judge Reinhart seemed to have a very good sense that it is his job as the gatekeeper in this case to perform his function of balancing the interest in the public of accessing these materials against the interest in the government in keeping them secret.
All right. And finally, Twitter has added a Know the Facts feature to guide users to accurate information about monkeypox after a push from GLAAD, and they are encouraging other platforms to do the same. The panel takes users to information from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. It comes up when anyone uses monkeypox or MPV as a search term. Mm. Very cool. That was what's trending this hour. What's happening in entertainment news, Ryan?
All right. One Hollywood actor is quitting social media because of his mental health. It's time for the T-Report. Those pop culture stories trending right now. Jonah Hill, the comedian. I mean, one who you would think is always in high spirits, but he's also been very open about his weight loss, what he thinks, you know, what he hears in the media and how it impacts him. Well, he is cutting ties between him and his fans. He has decided to delete his Instagram account this week, but it's unclear if he removed it before or after his candid letter discussing his nearly 20-year battle with anxiety attacks. Now, he said this, and he wrote a statement to Deadline regarding his lack of promotion for his upcoming documentary Stutz, which details his mental health struggles.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I've come to the understanding that I've spent nearly 20 years experiencing anxiety attacks, which are exacerbated by media appearances and public-facing events. He said, if I made myself sicker by going out there and promoting it, I wouldn't be acting true to myself or to the film. With this letter and with Stutz, I'm hoping to make it more normal for people to talk and act on this stuff.
Huh.
He did say he was like, he wants people to be able to take steps towards feeling better and so that the people in their lives might understand their issues more clearly.
Okay.
I mean, I do feel like people are saying, like, I'm hoping to make this more normal for people to talk about. But I do feel like we are entering into a stage where more and more people are talking about their mental health. And not just celebrities. I think it's happening across the board. And so, like, yes, I'm happy he's doing what he needs to do for himself. But I'm also like, people are talking about it, and I'm happy that you're taking the time that you need.
Yeah, and that's a big deal to say you're going to, you know, not do any promotion as well, right? Because, I mean, I get it, though. Promotion and doing those press tours, that is high anxiety. People are always trying to get that soundbite.
And it's one of those things where, especially with Jonah Hill specifically, he's always someone who's like, I feel like people talk to him about his weight a lot. Which is disgusting.
Everything
and
can
gross.
Be very triggering.
And
when
I
you're
think
doing
that's
it.
A huge trigger, right?
It takes a certain type of person to do this well and enjoy doing that.
Yeah.
Right? And so I get that. At the same time, it's like when you have a movie, it's like a project, it's like a startup, it's like a company. So you're telling me that you're not going to promote your company that your face is on.
Yeah.
It's like someone needs to.
And it's not just like it's a film, it's like a documentary about him.
Yeah, you know, he backs it, he supports it, right? He does support it. Because you know what?
That happened
with Russell Brand.
Yeah.
Someone we know, Andy Timoner, did a documentary on Russell Brand. And they were supposed to be at South By together. Mm. Last minute, Russell, after seeing the film, decides that it's too much for him. He's too triggered by it and decides to pull out of all PR around it after working with her to release the movie.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, and so pulls out of South by Southwest.
Why would you see it that late in the game?
Or I don't know, just realize like it's too triggering because it talks a lot about his addictions and all that, which is part of his life.
Yeah.
But instead of him being like, I support it, he like got all weird about it, like not maybe supporting her vision of him maybe because she had final say.
Wow.
Because I know her as a filmmaker, she does that. If you're doing a documentary on someone, it can't be a fluff piece. You need to like let go to someone really telling your story. That's an interesting thing. Anyway.
Yeah, that's your team report. We got more coming up next hour. Stick around for that.
Next up, states are considering the teacher shortage a crisis. Why is this happening? We're getting some of those answers after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
As we go back to school, we're facing a major crisis. Teachers are leaving classrooms and not coming back. I mean, the numbers are crazy from this article that we have from Vox.com. Are you ready for this? In Texas, teachers are... in Houston alone, reporting nearly 1,000 vacancies in early August. In Maryland, more than 5,500 teachers reportedly left the profession in 2022. Baltimore has an estimated 600 to 700 vacancies. These are just the beginning. I mean, I could go on and on, but it's not good out there.
A mess.
Yes. So joining us right now is Jackie Rodriguez, Vice President of Research, Policy, and Advocacy at the American Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. Thanks for being here.
Hi, y'all. How are you?
We are well, but what's happening in the school system is pretty bad. And these numbers are just wild, but teacher shortages are nothing new, right?
No, absolutely nothing new. We've been seeing these perennial shortages for decades now, especially in high needs areas. Special education, English as a second language, foreign languages, even in STEM areas. The problem is right now, not simply because of the pandemic, but a host of variables, including censorship and the like, we're seeing huge shortages across the country for staffing, not just in teaching professions, but also school psychology and sociology, the people who are in schools supporting students in wraparound services. So it is bleak right now.
Yeah, and because it just seems like it's a different type of dissatisfaction that teachers are experiencing right now with the work and kind of the situations they're being put in. Can you talk a little bit about that? What is kind of having them in this moment say, no, we refuse to do what we really love the most?
You know, I think that teachers actually want to be in classrooms. I 100% believe that every teacher, as a former special educator myself, wants to be with children, teaching and learning with them. I think the dilemma that you're talking about, that we're all facing, is this whiplash that teachers have faced, not just from the pandemic, but also the last several years of being told what to teach, how to teach, and what not to say in front of kids. And so we're talking about working conditions. We're also talking about censorship laws and regulatory processes that are keeping teachers from being able to come as their authentic selves into classrooms. And I think most teachers still want to be in the profession, but let's face it, we are looking at staggering salary that will not support new students coming into the field, with student loans in particular. We're looking at teachers who've been in the field for 10 or 15 years being told that the way in which they teach history is no longer appropriate, even though they're teaching the real, honest, authentic history to kids. And many of them, especially those in same-sex relationships, can't be speaking about themselves in front of students at this point in time. So imagine what it must feel like to be in an industry as an expert and be told that your professional expertise is no longer valued.
Yeah, definitely. So with all that said, what are these states doing right now? Because, I mean, school needs to continue.
Yeah. So what we're seeing is many, many principals, and I applaud principals and superintendents across the country. They are between a rock and a hard place trying to identify how to staff schools and staff them with really quality profession-ready educators so that every kid has a high-quality education. And they're doing that in lots of different ways with different strategies. So, for example, in some cases, we're looking at superintendents and principals working with their ed prep programs, local universities who prepare teachers to talk about paraprofessional pipelines. Let's get those 5- and 10-year paraprofessionals or student teachers and student aides into these courses that will help prepare them to become teachers, quality profession-ready educators in classrooms, and do that through tuition support or residency programs. And then those teachers come back and serve the community that they've been serving for many years for additional time just at the helm of that classroom.
Well, I also can't help how much safety plays a huge part of this conversation as well. I mean, there's been so many difficult conversations about gun regulations and putting teachers in positions of having to protect themselves and the students. I could assume that plays a huge part of this shift that we're seeing. I mean, overall, more than 44% of new teachers leave the profession within 5 years.
Yeah, it's incredible. That number is staggering. It has increased over time, but we've always seen high turnover in the first few years of teaching. It's an incredibly difficult job. Now, I cannot discount how school violence and safety plays a part in a teacher's decision to stay and re-retained or to leave and discontinue the profession. We don't have data that suggests that teachers are leaving over this, but we have anecdotal data from colleagues across the country that are indicating absolutely. When we are not regulating and legislating gun safety and gun control, then teachers feel the need to question whether or not their safety is at the helm of, you know, the local community or if they have to take it into their own hands.
Oh, my God. Where do you think this will all go?
Well, you know what? I really think that right now, as we consider every family in America trying to figure out who's going to be teaching their student, the question becomes, is your school not just staffed, right? Do you have all the teachers that you need? But the question really is, are the teachers in your classrooms profession ready and of high quality? Mm. We can have loads of professional and emergency licensed teachers in classrooms, people without bachelor's degrees, for example, in classrooms, but that does not qualify them to educate your child. Mm. So I always encourage families and community members to talk with principals and superintendents, collaborate on what it looks like to support them in the staffing shortages right now. Think about tutors, think about wraparound services, how can the community get involved? And then work collectively with their ed prep providers so that not only are we recruiting into the profession, but really we're retaining those who want to be there.
Yep. We need something more sustainable than what's happening. That was Jackie Rodriguez, Vice President, Research, Policy, and Advocacy at American Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, you all. Take care.
You too. Now, Trump's former CFO pled guilty in the tax fraud case. What does this mean for Trump? Well, all I have to say is, girl, you in trouble, honey. You in danger. That's up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Okay, so every day there seems to be a new scandal surrounding former President Donald Trump. This time, it's the former chief financial officer of the Trump Organization, Alan Weisselberg, who just pled guilty today to his role in a 15-year-long tax fraud scheme. Joining us to break all this down is Drexel Hurd, political strategist. Thank you so much for being here.
Always glad to be back. Hello, Tebow.
Yes, it's another beautiful day in the criminal neighborhood.
A criminal Thursday.
Okay, so this is quite interesting because not only did Alan plead guilty, but he also agreed to testify against Donald Trump's real estate company at trial. Talk to us of what this means, I guess, politically right now with everything that we've been seeing going on.
So the former CFO Weisselberg, you know, pleaded guilty to 15 a 15-count felony, basically. So, and what you just said was, you know, he agreed to. I don't think he necessarily had a choice to agree to testify at the next trial because, you know, the deal was either he testifies and gets 5 months in prison, or he doesn't testify and he gets 15 years in prison. And so the judge and New York Attorney General Letitia James basically said, look, you're going to do this. You're going to testify. And the judge even said, you need to testify truthfully as to what happened during your time as CFO and any criminal activity that happened at the Trump Organization during that time. So that is a huge blow to the Trump Organization right now, because that's just going to crack some things wide open that I don't think that Donald Trump and his associates had been expecting.
Yeah, so with that, do you think they're going to just push back that he was protecting himself and fight back that none of what he's saying? I feel like it's always said that, like, oh, they're just lying. It's a witch hunt, etc. Are we going to get the information that we're looking for at this point? Is this the final moment where Trump and his organization are being cornered?
They are definitely being cornered right now. And of course, the Trump Organization is going to say, you know, the same thing that Donald Trump said about Michael Cohen and any other past associate who has been criminally charged, that Donald Trump had nothing to do with this. He didn't know. Yeah. But this is the CFO of a large, this is the CFO who basically is, you know, that close to Donald Trump, who's the head of the organization. And this could implicate many of the kids as well, you know, who were a part of that. And so the question is going to be, how far down the Trump line does this go? And the Attorney General has been very methodical in her way about going about this case, because it is a high profile case. It's not just about tax fraud. It is about the criminal conspiracy that is and has been coming out of the Trump Organization for years.
And like on top of everything that's happening with this, you know, a judge did just say during a hearing at the West Palm Beach courthouse that he was planning to unseal portions of the affidavit, which is sought by various media outlets, you know, about the Mar-a-Lago search. And I'm just wondering at this point, I feel like we're all wondering, will Trump get actually locked? I mean, not locked up, but you know, is there going to be some accountability here? Because it just feels like no matter what he's doing, it's like, oh, well, we're still so unsure.
Well, Donald Trump could be charged with, you know, the Espionage Act for removing classified documents from the White House. He can go out there and say all day that he had the authority to declassify certain documents, but there's a process to declassify documents. He can't just kind of wave his hand like he thinks he does over a document and then it gets declassified. That's not how it works. And he certainly doesn't have the authority, even as President of the United States, to declassify nuclear documents, which is a part of that, what they were probably looking for as well. But the judge today said that the government has to unseal the affidavit, but that it can also be redacted. So we might just get a whole redacted affidavit with just a page number. So they don't actually have to provide the judge didn't put a stipulation on how much information, but it very well could just be like, hey, here's just a lot of black lines and Donald Trump's name. Or the government can redact out, you know, very specific things they need for the trial that they're pushing for, but also throwing the book at Donald Trump by saying, no, you're actually lying about X, Y, and Z, about the things that we actually took, and here's why. And I think that they're probably in a better position to do that. But also Merrick Garland has been very careful, and the FBI certainly has been very careful about what that looks like.
Well, all right, Drexel Hurd, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate you for breaking this down.
Anytime.
It's messy, but I love it. Thank you so much for being here. What's coming up next, Shira?
Nudging. We all do it. How does it actually impact our lives and relationships? We'll nudge you about that later.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
There's this thing called nudging, and at first when we were going to talk about this, I thought nudging like I'm nudging you, like I'm bothering you, like I'm pinging you, hitting you up.
That's a form of it.
It is, but this has actually been used by marketers and policymakers for a long time in ways that they create kind of subliminal messaging, subconscious messaging that help you get to a result that they want you to get. So examples of that could be, and this sounds really crazy, one of it was in spaces like urinals, right? They noticed that a lot of specifically people that were going into the quote-unquote male bathroom were using, they were going everywhere. And it helped having, like, a target
what
for them
mean,
to
put. Going everywhere? Can you be a little more clear about going everywhere?
So they put, like, a fake fly, like, so a target, so that people would target, and then it stopped it go from going everywhere.
Uh-huh.
Or to decrease energy consumption, they basically showed people what their neighbors were consuming to show them that they were consuming a lot more to get their energy use lower.
Yeah.
But then that could work also against you, because people who actually had low energy use started realizing that they were a lot lower than their neighbors and they should be maybe using more.
So it's very fascinating. I was talking to a friend whose fiance is a Impact producer, and basically he works with like storytellers and like networks and movies to make sure, like, even in movies, like in like the script, that somehow these folks, like directors or screenwriters, are implementing ways to that, just small little things that can impact like climate change, getting people to think differently about climate change. So if they see a character who is like recycling more and they're like with their friends, it has you like leaving the film or leaving that area thinking about, oh, maybe I should do more about
it's
it.
Top of mind.
Yeah. So it's like this weird kind of nudging that happens through this art form, which is another marketing tool that can have you like, I guess, not consciously thinking about like changing the way that you do things.
So here's the thing, like imagine, you want to eat healthier, your family to eat healthier, right?
Yeah.
So you might say like put a bunch of fruit out on the table or even in the kitchen, like at work.
That feels passive aggressive though. So what's the difference between nudging and being a passive aggressive? That just sounds like, just call me like you just say I eat anything and I'm fat and I'm all these disgusting words that you want to just actually, just say it to my face.
Oh my God. I mean, I guess, yeah. Like, that's a funny thing. I'm laughing at
you know,
that.
You know, as I say, what's the difference?
Yeah, like, imagine a poster in your employment place. You're like, oh, you're a bunch of lazy Fs. Mofos.
You could have sent that in the email.
You're a bunch of lazy folks. So I'm going to make sure you eat and drink healthy. I'm going to put a bunch of water out there. It might be passive aggressive. It also is helpful.
So it just depends on how
you look at it. Well, coming up next, more of what's trending and what Kanye had to say to his critics after his new Yeezy line was getting some attention. Next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Okay, so we're back for another top of the hour news. Of course, you know, the show is going to go on, honey. And of course, there's always going to be some amazing music here on Channel Q 24/7. So stick around for that. Now, here's what's coming up this hour. We've talked about how the Inflation Reduction Act will affect our wallets. But what about the climate? That's in 15. Then new COVID vaccines are rolling out in attempt to block variants like Omicron. But should you be getting your booster yet? So much to unpack here. We are going to dive right into it, of course. Now, let's get into, I guess, our top of the hour news. So the libs of TikTok said their account was suspended by Facebook after staffers at Boston's Children's Hospital reportedly got threats following a post that alleged the hospital was providing hysterectomies to minors. People are now calling on Twitter to take action, and they are suspending their account considering how many of their harmful posts are shared there. This is wild. I really can't believe it. Wait a minute. So next, I mean, let's go on to the next thing because that's a little, oh, that's intense. Honestly, I'm happy that Facebook has banned libs of TikTok because it can be a little bit intense. Now, the National Organization for Marriage is running a television ad against Senator Ron Johnson to pressure him to oppose the Respect for Marriage Act after last month. He said he wouldn't oppose it. Here is the ad. I'm pulling it up. You got to give me some time. What, Shira?
Oh, I'm here.
Yeah,
I just had gone
you're
out.
Here. Now, of course
I had to go to the
here.
Bathroom and
okay,
I didn't.
Okay, so we are back with some breaking news. What is going on? I don't know. Move on. We don't have that
All
clip.
Right. Well, let's move on to this story. And thank you for...
move on to the next story.
Thank you for that, Ryan. Two Southern historically black colleges will receive millions of dollars from Gilead Sciences to address the HIV epidemic in the region, which has become the epicenter of the virus in the U.S. Gilead announced $4.5 million for programs at Morehouse College in Atlanta, Xavier University of Louisiana in New Orleans to address structural barriers Black people face in getting HIV testing, treatment, and ongoing care. And I really appreciate what they're doing because they're also doing a lot for monkeypox, where they funded a bunch of organizations to provide more education and resources around getting to different communities.
I know, right?
So, like, yeah, there. I keep every week there's a new announcement about what they're doing. I appreciate it. Keep on going. Keep doing the right stuff. That was what's trending this hour. What's happening in entertainment news?
So Kanye West is defending what many have deemed a trash bag clothing display as his Yeezy Gap line hits stores around the country. So basically, we didn't talk about this yesterday, but yes, Kanye West decided that he's going to sell his new clothes out of trash bags in the middle of a Gap store. And that it was just, you know, people can just dig, and the clothing is displayed in these large bags for customers to basically go through and find their sizes. And many have compared the bags to trash bags. Now, he was basically, he decided to pop up on Fox News in a quick interview from the Gap location in Times Square, where basically he was asked if he understood why some have criticized that the clothing displays were insensitive, you know, to the homeless. And here's what he had to say.
Look, man, I'm an innovator, and I'm not here to sit up and apologize about my ideas. That's exactly what the media tries to do. Make us apologize for any idea that doesn't fall under exactly the way they want us to think.
I mean, regardless of what people think, you know, the displays, the clothing has still kind of been wildly popular and actually selling out in multiple locations. People are literally digging through it. He states that this is not a joke. This is not a game. This is not just a celebrity collaboration. This is my life. I'm fighting for a position to be able to change clothing and bring the best design to the people. My thing is, that's what he's doing. Then why would he put it in, like, trash bags? I just don't understand that.
It seems like it gives me the vibe of when you go to flea market or secondhand stores, in a way.
Yeah, where, but that's acceptable that vibe there. I just don't know if it's acceptable in the middle
of
that.
Well, it disrupts it. Yeah, it just, he's disrupting the system.
He was quick to point out that the bags weren't trash bags. They were large construction bags. Whatever that means. You know what I mean?
This just looks like what it looks like in my bedroom right now. So it's like home sweet home.
I can most definitely see that. But that is your team report. We got more coming up next hour.
Next up, the Inflation Reduction Act pledges to fight climate change. But how much can it do to actually help? That's next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Of course, we know President Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act into law at the White House Tuesday. It feels like forever ago. No. Just Tuesday feels like a long time ago.
Oh,
for
my
some
God,
reason.
It does, actually.
And, of course, saying in this very powerful statement, this bill is the biggest step forward on climate ever. Ever. He said ever twice. Joining us right now is Rebecca Lieber, senior reporter covering climate at Vox. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, so is this really the biggest thing the U.S. has done for climate? And then we got to get into, like, the nitty-gritty, how it's actually going to work.
It definitely is, as far as Congress goes, but let's just keep in mind that's not saying very much. Congress has not taken action on climate change for decades. So this is the U.S.'s first law that actually addresses the full scope of climate change pollution. That's nearly $370 billion for things like clean energy and electric vehicles. But let's just remember that this isn't enough to tackle the crisis to fully fix anything. So it's just the start.
Well, yeah, especially when you have someone like Manchin who was intending to introduce a whole separate bill. Can you talk about that and how it can possibly further mess up anything that, you know, this act is already could possibly do?
Yeah, let's remember that the law that Biden signed this week reflects a compromise. This is not everything that climate change advocates hope for, and this is already reflecting some severely compromised solutions, less money for all kinds of clean energy priorities, and also a few giveaways to fossil fuels. Now, there's a second bill that Manchin secured in a side deal to get his support for this. And that is still not a sure thing. They have to go through the entire Senate process for that separate permitting bill that would make it easier for fossil fuels to build infrastructure like pipelines. But that bill would require 60 votes in the Senate. So it's definitely not a sure thing that that's going to get through.
So, yeah, let's be realistic here. How many jobs can be created here? And also, do you think we're going to be, a winner when it comes to climate jobs? It seems like we're behind as it relates to the economy in that way.
Yeah, potentially this is a really big game changer for the domestic clean energy industry, partly because the U.S. government is finally securing tax breaks and incentives for over a decade. The industry has not had that kind of certainty and that longevity before because they're always on the cusp of expiring for these tax credits. So that's one reason that we could expect the industry to grow. But there's also funding for things like training for contractors to install energy efficiency appliances. There is more incentive for American manufacturers to produce and to use more American-made materials in things like electric vehicles. There is money to increase heat pump manufacturing in the U.S. So what Biden was trying to do initially with this kind of vision of an encompassing bill is to have this help U.S. manufacturing and industry at the same time it tackles climate change. And a lot of this will be in the implementation, but they're certainly trying to produce jobs here.
I guess as we wrap up here, I can't help but think about, once again, kind of going back to Manchin and like just politicians who have ties to a lot of the things that are so like anti-climate change. And so I wonder what that really means as far as a big picture, because it seems like we really can't do much, or they can't really do much unless everyone is on board, including even constituents.
Yeah, let's keep in mind that this was just Democrats who passed this. Republicans did not vote for this bill. So this is already a very partisan, polarized issue. But I think it's important to keep in mind that things like clean energy aren't actually that partisan. We do see places that have historically been relying on coal adopting things like solar panels. And this is happening in Manchin's own home state. So the writing is on the wall here that clean energy is the future for the American economy. And I think even though we do have this heavily compromised law and the chances of another bill going through that helps the fossil fuel industry, this does mean some big changes ahead for clean energy.
All right. Well, that was Rebecca Lieber, senior reporter covering climate at Vox. Thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, let's talk about COVID, because when will it be time for another COVID booster? We're going to dive in, because here is what some experts are thinking up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
All right. So, you know, there's so many conversations around COVID-19, but the latest news is saying that there are some new formulas that we should be aware of. And of course, when we're talking about booster shots, we have to stay up to date and know if we should be getting a new one or if we should be, you know, just kind of waiting for more availability
just
of these new formulas.
Just waiting.
Well, joining us to break all this down is Dr. Peter Chin Hong, professor of medicine and infectious disease specialist at UCSF School of Medicine. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Ryan. Hello, Shira.
Hi.
Now, okay, break this down, because I'm wanting to know, obviously, people who are up to date who have their booster shots, what's new about the conversation now?
The new thing about the conversation is that it's a new and improved formula. We haven't updated the vaccine for 2 years, and COVID has changed a lot, as people know. The spike proteins look so different that our antibodies don't do a great job of stopping the enemy at the front gate, although they do a great job once the enemy gets inside the body and it kicks it out, meaning that people are really well protected against going to the hospital when they're up to date on vaccines. But as everyone knows, not so good at preventing that breakthrough infection.
Yeah, definitely. So when should we be expected to take these now? Is this going to be a nationwide push?
Yeah, so, you know, we're expecting the new and improved boosters to be available in the middle of September. It was going to be the end of October, early November, but I think they got some incentives to maybe get that timeline done earlier. And what it means is that we have the old formula available now for people, and it is likely going to be something new in mid-September. We're not 100% sure. So the advice is, if you're eligible for the booster, particularly if you're older, immune compromised, you should go ahead and get it right now, because now is now. And, you know, later, you know, who knows how much of the population will be eligible for it, although we hope at least over 12.
And do we know how, especially for folks who are getting the monkeypox vaccine, do we know how that interacts with this new formula or this, you know, like how, because it is a lot of, it feels like a lot of vaccines going in your body at once.
I know. It could be tough. I mean, in general, it's safe to get them both on different arms at the same time. But if you can, you know, wing it, you should probably get them on different days so that, you know, you don't have like two sore arms going around. I would say getting both vaccines, they were pretty well tolerated. The monkeypox vaccine was maybe a little bit, gave me a little bit more of a sore arm. And, you know, the COVID vaccine seemed pretty even easier to get for me.
So are you saying for like the fall, it's kind of like flu season, like we should be doing this like right before the holiday season?
Yes, I mean, that is for sure the fact that winter is coming. And with winter, it means that people are getting together in closer indoor quarters. And we expect that there'll be more virus around. So I think part of the reason for having this available in mid-September is that people can go ahead and protect themselves against the winter viruses, including influenza. In the future, and people are already working on this, they're going to combine the booster and the flu shot into one. So it'll be like one-stop shopping.
All right. Well, thank you so much for always keeping us updated. This is really good information that we all need to know. Dr. Peter Chin-Hung, professor of medicine and an infectious disease specialist, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Ryan and Shira.
Thank you. Well, next up, you've heard of red flags and even pink flags in relationships, but what about beige flags? We're talking about it next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Well, we've talked about red flags, pink flags in life and relationships. Well,
what's
now
a pink flag? I don't even remember that one.
I guess it's in between.
Yeah. I would
say, like, not too bad, but kind of bad.
Kind of bad.
So now, though, there are beige flags.
Which that sounds like more in between.
Yeah, I don't know. We come up with a buzzword for everything these days. So beige flags are signs on a dating app. I think life at large, you know. But when it comes to dating apps, this is according to this Mashable article, that someone hasn't put much effort into their dating profile. It means that the conversation and potential date that might follow could also be dull and unsuccessful.
I hate that. That's like one of my biggest pet peeves, when someone on their profile literally doesn't say anything. I'm just like, girl, what are you on here for? One, your pictures suck, and then two, you don't got nothing to say. Then what? You're literally telling people you're not a catch.
Yeah, is this like a sign of who they are, actually?
Yeah, like you just got tired of, and some people will just say on their bios being like, I don't know, I'm not really good at these, just message me. So you want me to like hold most of the conversation and interview you? This ain't Oprah.
So you don't
like what?
You don't feel it's intriguing?
No, I find that to be lazy. And like where does that show up in other parts of your life?
Oh, well, yeah. This person says, according to this article, that beige flags, also just in general, are like something about whether chocolate belongs in the fridge or the cupboard. Then them saying that they'll probably love their dog more than you, or lots of gym selfies and references to the gym are typically beige flags.
I did have a food related thing on my bio for a minute. Like, what? I was asking people what their favorite Pop-Tart flavor was.
Oh, that's cute. But I found it to be like a fun trivia.
It was a conversation starter.
Yeah.
But then I was like, but make sure you don't say it's strawberry, because then I don't want to talk to you.
Why? Isn't that like the only Pop-Tart flavor?
No! And it's the worst one.
I guess we're not dating.
No, we're not.
I actually used to love Pop-Tarts. I was into Pop-Tarts. I think on my profile when I was single and I was on a dating app for a moment, I said I loved pickles. But of course,
but that sounds like you just love penis.
I actually do love pickles, though.
I know you. So, I know you love pickles, but you putting that on a dating app, people are going to be like, "Oh, she loves penis."
Maybe that's why I got a lot of swipes. But it didn't work out for them because someone else.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying pickles with.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Hello, we are back, and we got more music coming up right here on Channel Q, and right now we got some more show. We're here to inform and entertain you as well. We're going to be talking about setting boundaries coming up. It's more than just saying no. That's in 15 minutes. What does that even mean? We'll tell you. Plus, why James Franco's new role is causing some controversy later on as well this hour. Let's get into some What's Trending This Hour headlines, though, right now. The Biden administration is hoping to prevent monkeypox spread by better educating and vaccinating LGBTQ plus people as part of a pilot program. State and local health jurisdictions in areas hosting pride events will receive a monkeypox vaccine boost as the Department of Health and Human Services unlocks 50,000 doses set aside from the strategic nation stockpile. So good news there. Mm-hmm. Moving on.
They're doing what they need to do.
Yes, exactly. Moving on to Wisconsin, the Kettle Moraine School Board in Wisconsin has banned staff from exhibiting pride flags and listing their pronouns on emails if voted unanimously in favor of the policy. Basically, they did. It happened. Board members claim it is not a new stance, but simply a clarification of the existing code of conduct, saying employees are forbidden from making political statements. Ay, ay, ay. Saying your pronouns is not a political statement. It's just saying who you are. It's sharing your identity so we can all respect each other and communicate better.
Actually, it's just regular grammar.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a political statement.
It's literally just English that your forefathers used.
Anyway, finally, there's a clip that's been going viral of this Canadian politician swallowing a bee. Ontario Premier Doug Ford swallowed a bee in the middle of a press conference. Here's the moment.
Oh, we're going to hear it.
Holy Christ. I just swallowed a bee. Holy Christ. I knew that little bugger. Oh. Holy Christ. He's wedged in my throat. Sorry, guys. A little bugger got away in there. Okay. Oh, I'm okay. He's buzzing in there. Man, he went right down the hatch. Okay, guys. This is a classic, okay?
Oh, God, I think I'm going to throw up.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't the bee have stung him?
I don't know what happened. You know, he did promise to go to the hospital.
Oh, my God. This happened. You know, bees, when they get stressed out, they automatically sting. But if a bee stings you,
I feel like I'm
going to
have, like, some sort of... I'm, like, thinking about it now.
That bee was like, I'm not about to risk my last little... Ugh. Okay, you didn't swallow the bee. Relax.
It's just the thought of it literally makes me...
Holy Christ. I just swallowed the bee. Holy Christ. I knew that little bugger.
But you see, Canadians are so nice in the way they do it.
Oh, that man's like 2 seconds away from, like, dying. He's like, oh, that little bugger.
I know. That's who we are in Canada. We're nice to animals, even when they go in our mouths,
oh,
and our throats.
Oh, my God.
That was, by the way, that was a video. It was posted today by outlets like ABC News, but it did happen, I believe, earlier this week or last week.
Oh, my God. That is so funny. That is actually really funny.
Yes, that was What's Trending This Hour, What's Happening in Entertainment News.
Oh, my God, if you are a Selling Sunset fan, there is some literal changes that probably will disappoint you happening. It's time for the T-Report, those pop culture stories trending right now. I don't know about y'all, but I am disappointed because I love Selling Sunset on Netflix. It's one of my favorite little reality shows. Christine Quinn, the Queen Bee. You know, my favorite, she's officially leaving the show after appearing on 5 seasons. Multiple sources confirm that Quinn's exit basically is she's basically ready to move to bigger and better things. Christine knew this day would come, according to sources. She's proud of the work she's put into making Selling Sunset a success, but she could see herself phasing out of the cast even before she began filming season 4 and 5. This source also adds that her goals are far bigger than playing a villain on an ensemble reality series. She can't wait to start the next chapter of her career and show the world who she truly is. I love her.
Really? What do you like about her?
Well, I love that she's such a great villain. It takes talent to be a really good villain. And then also, she's a fashion girl. And I got, like, I actually saw her, I think she was at this most recent MTV Movie Awards Unscripted. I can't remember. Maybe she wasn't. But, like, I am just really a fan of hers. I think she carries the show.
No.
And it's going to be sad to see her not there. She is, she was the villain, you know, and that can
What
be
does it mean to be a villain on that show? Just a B word?
Yeah. But she came with the looks. She came with, like, the boss girl attitude, and I kind of really enjoyed it. Hmm. I really did. It's really difficult to be a good villain, but then also still find ways to, like, have the audience like you. And yeah. The audience liked her.
Hmm.
They just, you know, she was a B-word.
I need to watch some of her interviews to hear her talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's really sad, though. That's your T Report. I thought I would throw in a little TV reality news.
Yeah, that's a big show. Big enough show, I feel, at this point. You know, me and my boyfriend know someone who's going to be on, I think, Selling Sunset or a new version of it on Netflix.
Yeah, the Orange County one.
Not Orange County. I think it might be a new addition to Selling Sunset. He's our friend, and just saying, you know, maybe.
There's two things happening here, you know what I mean? There's a new reality Netflix show that is a real estate, that's Mauricio.
Yeah.
And then there's Selling Sunset. They do have an OC office that they're opening up. You can't text now. We're running out of time, Sherry.
All right, sort of, fine.
That's your team
report.
I was
trying to break the news.
No one, no.
All right, after this, setting boundaries are a key part of healthy relationships, but there's more to it than just saying no. We're getting into it next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
We talk a lot about boundaries these days, but, you know, it's more than just saying no. Boundaries are a way to value yourself, and they don't have to be scary. And so there's a book out right now called Set Boundaries, Find Peace. And there's this really great article in Vox.com where they talk to the author. So we thought we'd use this as a jumping off point to talk about boundaries.
Oh.
So I guess, what do boundaries first before we get it more into her theory around it and not just saying no? What are your thoughts on boundaries, and how have you been setting boundaries for yourself these days, Ryan?
You know, setting boundaries for me is something that I'm constantly working on. I think it's a constant shift, because as you evolve, as you change, boundaries change as well. They shift. They are just like you in your evolution. And so for me, boundaries now, I think I'm still figuring it out. And I think I categorize it from a personal boundary to a professional boundary. And I think those two things are, they're two different things. Personal boundaries are like what I require in personal relationships, friendships, what I'm figuring out, what I want in future partners, and how that shows up for me. And then professional boundaries are like working with other people and like understanding how they communicate while also staying true to my feelings and staying valid, well, true to, you know, how I'm feeling about a certain situation, not feeling like I have to necessarily kind of tone down or shift or switch certain things that doesn't feel true to me, that makes me uncomfortable, I think, right? I think boundaries are all about setting up space for yourself where you don't go into a negative space. It's boundaries are there so you can keep your damn peace.
That is true. But in setting boundaries or learning what that means for yourself and others.
How you figure out your balance before you go into therapy,
no,
Sharon?
I want to just say this because it came up and I need to share before I forget.
Okay.
Because I will forget. and I already did. No. Sometimes in doing that, it can be not peaceful or uncomfortable because we're shifting and learning, right? And like understanding how we relate to others and what that means to us and others. So it can lead, I think, as we figure out how to do it in a healthy way, it can lead to a lot of peace. But I think in the midst of it, there's a lot of messiness that can happen, and that's okay.
Well,
and there's a lot of messiness.
Well, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because I think if you are setting clear boundaries, that means your boundaries have kept you protected from that mess. And if there's mess, that means that's happening on the other side, and that's how people are reacting to you setting your boundaries. I think that's what the mess is.
Oh, I meant that happens too. I meant the messiness is like sometimes you might not know how to fully communicate it, even though you are, quote unquote, setting your boundaries, like the intention is.
Yeah, communication is a huge part of it.
Because, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. It's messy because you're learning what that means and how to get it out there and in establishing all that, because a lot of us haven't been taught that.
How do you establish boundaries? What are you, like, how?
I think fully being myself.
Oh, God.
No, I think that, in intimate relationships, setting my boundaries was fully speaking my truth. And that might be weird to say how I set my boundaries. It meant that if a person wasn't right for me, they would probably not want to continue dating me because I kind of set up who I actually was instead of pretending I'm someone who I'm not or keeping who I am away from them, right? Like keeping certain, and of course you don't need to be like share all your secrets or be completely honest the first date, right? In that way. But because I maybe wasn't showing up fully as I am or not sharing certain parts of me, you're kind of censoring yourself. You're stopping yourself from learning who's actually the right person for you and the wrong person for you, right?
Yeah.
There's a bit of that. And then I think similarly in my work relationships, because of wanting to get validation or wanting to get the jobs, we tend to shape shift, right? And be chameleons, which you could say we've done that out of survival. But that might lead you into even work relationships that are not the right thing because you just like played into a character to get close to it. And that's not really who you are. And then you get the job or you end up in a certain situation. You're like, oh, this doesn't feel right. I continue not to like this. This doesn't feel good. It's because you pretended you were someone else to get it.
Well, and I think that's
you know what I mean?
That, so like, and that's so interesting because I think that's something that I'm currently working on in therapy with in resetting my boundaries and figuring out how though in the ways where you're like trying to show up, and this is just me thinking about like kind of like dating, right? And showing up and like as your full entire self. A lot of times, the reason why folks can't do that is because their boundaries are so out of whack that they've lost contact with who they actually are. And
oof,
I think that for me has literally happened where I'm like, oh, I gotta actually like relearn who I am. So that means where I can actually be available to show that to someone.
Exactly. It
you know
all
what I mean?
Starts with you, definitely. And then you, by you showing up for yourself and seeing how other people are showing up for themselves, you start kind of respecting and having compassion for that.
Yeah.
Whether, by the way, you quote unquote like them or not, agree with them or not, you kind of could see it from a bit more of a bird's eye view.
Yeah.
Because you see what they're doing and you respect that and you value it. Even if it doesn't align, you go, you know what? Maybe I'm into this, maybe I'm not, but like, I see what you're doing. And with that, this might work or might not work.
Yeah,
and that's
how,
okay.
How can you really like set your boundaries if you don't know like what actually really kind
of well,
like,
a lot of people create a boundary thing when it's really just a power play or control.
That's interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
So they mistake it for that.
So that's more so rooted in like an ego.
Ego or fear.
Okay. I can see that.
Yep.
I can see the fear. Well, what do you mean the fear?
Fear of not being understood, not quote unquote winning, you know, what someone else might think, what someone else might do, judgment.
Ulterior motives.
Yeah,
the story.
Exactly. Oh, okay. The stories we tell ourselves.
Yeah.
So we say, this is my boundary. And you're like, is that a boundary? Or are you just trying to control the situation?
Which is kind of.
So anyway, like there's a gray area. That said, I love what this author says in terms of it's not just about saying no or like there is consent. You know, we talk about consent and boundaries, like don't touch me like that. It's important.
Yeah.
Don't go in my my personal space. I don't like that. Don't touch my hair. You know, like also when you mispronounce someone's name or mislabel someone, setting your boundary with pronouns, your pronunciation of your name. That is a boundary. That's saying like, this is how I want you to call me and, you know, et cetera. It could be that or just setting your boundaries like, hey, I'm a vegetarian vegan. And you're respecting that. So you're helping someone, like, if you're, order, you know, choosing a reservation for everyone.
Well, don't expect that with me.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Well, recently it was announced that James Franco was cast to play Fidel Castro in a new independent film, leaving actors of color to wonder, are there ever going to be any characters left for them? Seriously. Well, here to talk about Hollywood's perpetual blind spot is Ed Morales, journalist, author, and professor. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for inviting me on the program.
No, most definitely. You know, it's so interesting because it seems like no matter all of the conversations about inclusivity and diversity, we still find ourselves landing here. What were your thoughts when this news kind of came out? Let's start there.
Well, you know, it's kind of typical. Often these decisions are made for the bottom line and it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy where, you know, James Franco is like the big box office name and producers probably made a determination that he would attract more people at the box office. But the problem is that there aren't enough bankable, marketable stars in the Hollywood star system that are Latino, and it's often because they don't get a chance in the first place.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I mean, it feels like they could have found someone who is Latino if they really
tried. Of course they could have. What?
Right? It's like there's obviously an issue here. Unless this is completely an indie film, and yeah, he just got in, and it seems like he wants to make a name again for himself after this whole
his scandal.
So maybe this is his quote unquote Oscar winning moment, even though now he's created more of a scandal again.
It's true. Well, I mean, to be somewhat fair, the two screenwriters are people that I've interviewed, Nilo Cruz and Jose Rivera, who are Cuban and Puerto Rican, respectively. And they're really talented screenwriters. And then most of the rest of the cast is Latino. But of course, you know, the lead actor is so important about projecting, you know, really connecting with the audience. And so it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it really is, because this also brings up, all right, so, you know, there's so many conversations around COVID-19, but the latest news is saying that there are some new formulas that we should be aware of. And, of course, when we're talking about booster shots, we have to stay up to date and know if we should be getting a new one or if we should be, you know, just kind of waiting for more availability
just
of these new formulas.
Just waiting.
Well, joining us to break all this down is Dr. Peter Chin Hong, professor of medicine and infectious disease specialist at UCSF School of Medicine. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Ryan. Hello, Shira.
Hi.
Now, okay, break this down, because I'm wanting to know, obviously, people who are up to date who have their booster shots, what's new about the conversation now?
The new thing about the conversation is that it's a new and improved formula. We haven't updated the vaccine for 2 years. And COVID has changed a lot, as people know. The spike proteins look so different that our antibodies don't do a great job of stopping the enemy at the front gate, although they do a great job once the enemy gets inside the body and it kicks it out, meaning that people are really well protected against going to the hospital when they're up to date on vaccines. But as everyone knows, not so good at preventing that breakthrough infection.
Yeah, definitely. So when should we be expected to take these now? Is this going to be a nationwide push?
Yeah, so, you know, we're expecting the new and improved boosters to be available in the middle of September. It was going to be the end of October, early November, but I think they got some incentives to maybe get that timeline done earlier. And what it means is that we have the old formula available now for people, and they is likely going to be something new in mid-September. We're not 100% sure. So the advice is, if you're eligible for the booster, particularly if you're older, immune compromised, you should go ahead and get it right now, because now is now. And, you know, later, you know, who knows how much of the population will be eligible for it, although we hope at least over 12.
And do we know how, especially for folks who are getting the monkeypox vaccine, do we know how that interacts with this new formula or this, you know, like how, because it is a lot of, it feels like a lot of vaccines going in your body at once.
I know. It could be tough. I mean, in general, it's safe to get them both on different arms at the same time. But if you can, you know, wing it, you should probably get them on different days so that, you know, you don't have like two sore arms going around. I would say getting both vaccines, they were pretty well tolerated. The monkeypox vaccine was maybe gave me a little bit more of a sore arm. And, you know, the COVID vaccine seemed pretty even easier to get for me.
So are you saying for like the fall, it's kind of like flu season, like we should be doing this like right before the holiday season?
Yes, I mean, that is for sure the fact that winter is coming. And with winter, it means that people are getting together in closer indoor quarters. And we expect that there'll be more virus around. So I think part of the reason for having this available in mid-September is that people can go ahead and protect themselves against the winter viruses, including influenza. In the future, and people are already working on this, they're going to combine the booster and the flu shot into one. So it'll be like one-stop shopping.
All right. Well, thank you so much for always keeping us updated. This is really good information that we all need to know. Dr. Peter Chin Hong, professor of medicine and an infectious disease specialist. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Ryan and Shira.
Thank you. Well, next up, you've heard of red flags and even pink flags in relationships, but what about beige flags? We're talking about it next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Well, we've talked about red flags, pink flags in life and relationships. Well,
what's
now,
a pink flag? I don't even remember that one.
I guess it's in between.
Yeah.
It's not too bad, but kind of bad. So now, though, there are beige flags.
Which that sounds like more in between.
Yeah, I don't know. We come up with a buzzword for everything these days. So beige flags are signs on a dating app. I think life at large, you know. When it comes to dating apps, this is according to this Mashable article, that someone hasn't put much effort into their dating profile. It means that the conversation and potential date that might follow could also be dull and unsuccessful.
I hate that. That's like one of my biggest pet peeves when someone on their profile literally doesn't say anything. I'm just like, girl, what are you on here for? One, your pictures suck, and then two, you don't got nothing to say. Then what? You're literally telling people you're not a catch.
Yeah, is this like a sign of who they are, actually?
Yeah, like you just got tired of, and some people will just say on their bios being like, I don't know, I'm not really good at these. Just message me. So you want me to like hold most of the conversation and interview you? This ain't Oprah.
So you don't
like what?
You don't feel it's intriguing?
No, I find that to be lazy. And like where does that show up in other parts of your life?
Oh, well, yeah. This person says, according to this article, that beige flags, also just in general, are like something about whether chocolate belongs in the fridge or the cupboard. Then them saying that they'll probably love their dog more than you, or lots of gym selfies and references to the gym are typically beige flags.
I did have a food related thing on my bio for a minute. Like, what? I was asking people what their favorite Pop-Tart flavor was.
Oh, that's cute. I think that's a fun trivia.
It was a conversation starter.
Yeah.
But then I was like, make sure you don't say it's strawberry, because then I don't want to talk to you.
Why? Isn't that like the only Pop-Tart flavor?
No! And it's the worst one.
I guess we're not dating.
No, we're not.
I actually used to love Pop-Tarts. I was into Pop-Tarts. I think on my profile when I was single and I was on dating app for a moment, I said I loved pickles. But of course,
but that sounds like you just love penis.
I actually do love pickles, though.
I know you. So, I know you love pickles, but you putting that on a dating app, people are going to be like, "Oh, she loves penis."
Maybe that's why I got a lot of swipes. But it didn't work out for them because someone else.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying pickles with.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Hello, we are back, and we got more music coming up right here on Channel Q, and right now we got some more show. We're here to inform and entertain you as well. We're going to be talking about setting boundaries coming up. It's more than just saying no. That's in 15 minutes. What does that even mean? We'll tell you. Plus, why James Franco's new role is causing some controversy later on as well this hour. Let's get into some What's Trending This Hour headlines, though, right now. The Biden administration is hoping to prevent monkeypox spread by better educating and vaccinating LGBTQ plus people as part of a pilot program. State and local health jurisdictions in areas hosting pride events will receive a monkeypox vaccine boost as the Department of Health and Human Services unlocks 50,000 doses set aside from the strategic nation stockpile. So good news there. Moving on.
They're doing what they need to do.
Yes, exactly. Moving on to Wisconsin, the Kettle Moraine School Board in Wisconsin has banned staff from exhibiting pride flags and listing their pronouns on emails if voted unanimously in favor of the policy. Basically, it happened. Board members claim it is not a new stance, but simply a clarification of the existing code of conduct, saying employees are forbidden from making political statements. Ay-yay-yay. Saying your pronouns is not a political statement. It's just saying who you are. It's sharing your identity so we can all respect each other and communicate
better.
Actually,
it's just regular grammar.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a political statement.
It's literally just English that your forefathers used.
Anyway, finally, there's a clip that's been going viral of this Canadian politician swallowing a bee. Ontario Premier Doug Ford swallowed a bee in the middle of a press conference. Here's the moment.
Oh, we're going to hear it.
Holy Christ. I just swallowed a bee. Holy Christ. I knew that little bugger. Oh. Holy Christ. He's wedged in my throat. Sorry, guys. Little bugger got away in there. Okay. Oh, I'm okay. He's buzzing in there. Man, he went right down the hatch. Okay, guys. This is a classic, okay?
Oh, God. I think I'm going to throw up.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't the bee have stung him?
I don't know. He did promise to go to the hospital.
Oh, my God. This happened. You know, bees, when they get stressed out, they automatically sting. But if a bee stings you,
I feel like I'm
going to
have, like, some sort of... I'm, like, thinking about it now.
That bee was like, I'm not about to risk my last little... Ugh. Okay, you didn't swallow the bee. Relax.
It's just the thought of it literally makes me...
Holy Christ. I just swallowed a bee. Holy Christ. I knew that little bugger.
But you see, Canadians are so nice in the way they do it.
Yo, that man's like 2 seconds away from, like, dying. He's like, oh, that little bugger.
I know. That's who we are in Canada. We're nice to animals, even when they go in our mouths,
oh,
in our throats.
Oh, my God.
That was, by the way, that was a video. It was posted today by outlets like ABC News, but it did happen, I believe, earlier this week or last week.
Oh, my God. That is so funny. That is actually really funny.
Yes, that was what's trending this hour. What's happening in entertainment news?
Oh, my God. If you are a Selling Sunset fan, there is some literal changes that probably will disappoint you happening. It's time for the T-Report. Those pop culture stories trending right now. I don't know about y'all, but I am disappointed because I love Selling Sunset on Netflix. It's one of my favorite little reality shows. Christine Quinn, the queen bee. You know, my favorite, she's officially leaving the show after appearing on 5 seasons. Multiple sources confirm that Quinn's exit basically she's basically ready to move to bigger and better things. Christine knew this day would come, according to sources. She's proud of the work she's put into making Selling Sunset a success, but she could see herself phasing out of the cast even before she began filming season 4 and 5. This source also adds that her goals are far bigger than playing a villain on an ensemble reality series. She can't wait to start the next chapter of her career and show the world who she truly is. I love her.
Really? What do you like about her?
Well, I love that she's such a great villain. It takes talent to be a really good villain. And then also she's a fashion girl. And I got, like, I actually saw her, I think she was at this most recent MTV Movie Awards Unscripted. I can't remember. Maybe she wasn't. But, like, I am just really a fan of hers. I think she carries the show.
No.
And it's going to be sad to see her not there. She is, she was the villain, you know? And that
what does it mean to be a villain on that show? Just a B-word?
Yeah. But she came with the looks. She came with, like, the boss girl attitude. And I kind of really enjoyed it. I really did. It's really difficult to be a good villain, but then also still find ways to, like, have the audience like you. And the audience liked her. They just, you know, she was a B-word.
I need to watch some of her interviews to hear her talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's really sad, though. That's your T-Report. I thought I would throw in a little TV reality news.
Yeah, that's a big show. Big enough show, I feel, at this point. You know, me and my boyfriend know someone who's going to be on... I think Selling Sunset or a new version of it on Netflix.
Yeah, the Orange County one.
Not Orange County. I think it might be a new addition to Selling Sunset. He's our friend and just saying, you know, maybe...
There's two things happening here. You know what I mean? There's a new reality Netflix show that is a real estate that's Mauricio.
Yeah.
And then there's Selling Sunset. They do have an OC office that they're opening up. You can't text now. We're running out of time, Sherry.
All right, sort of- fine.
That's your team
report.
I was
trying to break the news.
No one, no.
All right, after this, setting boundaries are a key part of healthy relationships, but there's more to it than just saying no. We're getting into it next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
We talk a lot about boundaries these days, but, you know, it's more than just saying no. Boundaries are a way to value yourself, and they don't have to be scary. And so there's a book out right now called Set Boundaries, Find Peace. And there's this really great article in Vox.com where they talk to the author. So we thought we'd use this as a jumping off point to talk about boundaries.
Ooh.
So I guess, what do boundaries first before we get more into her theory around it and not just saying no. What are your thoughts on boundaries, and how have you been setting boundaries for yourself these days, Ryan?
You know, setting boundaries for me is something that I'm constantly working on. And I think it's a constant shift, because as you evolve, as you change, boundaries change as well. They shift. They are just like you in your evolution. And so for me, boundaries now, I think I'm still figuring it out. And I think I categorize it from a personal boundary to a professional boundary. And I think those two things are, they're two different things. Personal boundaries are like what I require in personal relationships, friendships, what I'm figuring out, what I want in future partners and how that shows up for me. And then professional boundaries are like working with other people and like understanding how they communicate while also staying true to my feelings and staying valid, well, true to, you know, how I'm feeling about a certain situation, not feeling like I have to necessarily kind of tone down or shift or switch certain things that doesn't feel true to me, that makes me uncomfortable, I think, right? I think boundaries are all about setting up space for yourself where you don't go into a negative space. It's boundaries are there so you can keep your damn peace.
That is true. But in setting boundaries or learning what that means for yourself and others.
How you figure out your balance before you go into therapy,
no,
Sharon?
I want to just say this because it came up and I need to share before I forget.
Okay.
Because I will forget. and I already did. No. Sometimes in doing that, it can be not peaceful or uncomfortable because we're shifting and learning, right? And like understanding how we relate to others and what that means to us and others. So it can lead, I think, as we figure out how to do it in a healthy way, it can lead to a lot of peace. But I think in the midst of it, there's a lot of messiness that can happen, and that's okay.
Well,
and there's a lot of messiness.
Well, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because I think if you are setting clear boundaries, that means your boundaries have kept you protected from that mess. And if there's mess, that means that's happening on the other side, and that's how people are reacting to you setting your boundaries. I think that's what the mess is.
Oh, I meant that happens too. I meant the messiness is like sometimes you might not know how to fully communicate it, even though you are, quote unquote, setting your boundaries, like the intention is.
Yeah, communication is a huge part
because,
of it.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. It's messy because you're learning what that means and how to get it out there and in establishing all that, because a lot of us haven't been taught that.
How do you establish boundaries? What are you, like, how?
I think fully being myself.
Oh, God.
No, I think that, I mean, in intimate relationships, setting my boundaries was fully speaking my truth. And that might be weird to say how I set my boundaries. It meant that if a person wasn't right for me, they would probably not want to continue dating me because I kind of set up who I actually was instead of pretending I'm someone who I'm not, or keeping who I am away from them, right? Yeah. Like keeping certain, and of course you don't need to be like share all your secrets or be completely honest the first date, right, in that way.
Yeah.
But because I maybe wasn't showing up fully as I am, or not sharing certain parts of me, you're kind of censoring yourself. You're stopping yourself from learning who's actually the right person for you and the wrong person for you, right?
Yeah. So
there's a bit of that. And then I think similarly in my work relationships, because of wanting to get validation or wanting to get the jobs, we tend to shape shift, right? And be chameleons, which you could say we've done that out of survival. But that might lead you into even work relationships that are not the right thing because you just like played into a character to get close to it. And that's not really who you are. And then you get the job or you end up in a certain situation. You're like, oh, this doesn't feel right. I continue not to like this. This doesn't feel good. It's because you pretended you were someone else to get it.
Well, and I think that's,
you know what I mean?
That, so like, and that's so interesting because I think that's something that I'm currently working on in therapy with, in resetting my boundaries and figuring out how, though, in the ways where you're like trying to show up, and this is just me thinking about like kind of like dating, right? And showing up and like as your full entire self. A lot of times the reason why folks can't do that is because their boundaries are so out of whack that they've lost contact with who they actually are. And
oof,
I think that for me has literally happened where I'm like, oh, I gotta actually like relearn who I am. So that means where I can actually be available to show that to someone.
Exactly. It,
you know,
all
I mean?
Starts with you, definitely. And then you, by you showing up for yourself and seeing how other people are showing up for themselves, you start kind of respecting and having compassion for that.
Yeah.
Whether, by the way, you quote unquote, like them or not, agree with them or not, you kind of could see it from a bit more of a bird's eye view.
Yeah.
Because you see what they're doing and you respect that and you value it. Even if it doesn't align, you go, you know what? Maybe I'm into this, maybe I'm not, but like, I see what you're doing. And with that, this might work or might not work.
Yeah,
and that's
how,
okay.
How can you really like set your boundaries if you don't know like what actually really kind of
Well, a
like,
lot of people create a boundary thing when it's really just a power play or control.
Mm, that's interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
So they mistake it for that.
So that's more so rooted in like an ego.
Ego or fear.
Mm, okay. I can see that.
Yep.
I can see the fear. Well, what do you mean the fear?
Fear of... not being understood, not quote unquote winning, you know, what someone else might think, what someone else might do, judgment.
Ulterior motives.
Yeah,
the story.
Exactly. Oh, okay. The stories we tell ourselves.
Yeah.
So we say, this is my boundary. And you're like, is that a boundary? Or are you just trying to control the situation?
Which is kind of.
So anyway, like there's a gray area. That said, I love what this author says in terms of it's not just about saying no or like there is consent. You know, we talk about consent and boundaries, like don't touch me like that. It's important.
Yeah.
Don't go in my physical, my personal space. I don't like that. Don't touch my hair. You know, like also when you mispronounce someone's name or mislabel someone, setting your boundary with pronouns, your pronunciation of your name. That is a boundary. That's saying like, this is how I want you to call me and, you know, et cetera. It could be that or... just setting your boundaries like, hey, I'm a vegetarian vegan, and you're respecting that. So you're helping someone, like, if you're, order, you know, choosing a reservation for everyone.
Well, don't expect that with me.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Well, recently it was announced that James Franco was cast to play Fidel Castro in a new independent film, leaving actors of color to wonder, are there ever going to be any characters left for them? Seriously. Mm-hmm. Well, here to talk about Hollywood's perpetual blind spot is Ed Morales, journalist, author, and professor. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for inviting me on the program.
No, most definitely. You know, it's so interesting because it seems like no matter all of the conversations about inclusivity and diversity, we still find ourselves landing here. What were your thoughts when this news kind of came out? Let's start there.
Well, you know, it's kind of typical. Often these decisions are made for the bottom line and it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy where, you know, James Franco is like the big box office name and producers probably made a determination that he would attract more people at the box office. But the problem is that there aren't enough bankable, marketable stars in the Hollywood star system that are Latino. And it's often because they don't get a chance in the first place.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I mean, it feels like they could have found someone who was Latino if they really
tried. Of course
tried.
They could have. What?
Right? It's like there's obviously an issue here, unless this is completely an indie film. And yeah, he just got in and it seems like he wants to make a name again for himself after this whole
his scandal.
So maybe this is his quote unquote Oscar winning moment, even though now he's created more of a scandal again.
It's true. Well, I mean, to be somewhat fair, the two screenwriters are people that I've interviewed, Nilo Cruz and Jose Rivera, who are Cuban and Puerto Rican, respectively. And they're really talented screenwriters. And then most of the rest of the cast is Latino. But, of course, you know, the lead actor is so important about projecting, you know, really connecting with the audience. And so it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it really is, because this also brings up a term that is many referred to as brown face, or the practice of using white American actors to portray U.S.-born Latinx or Latin Americans. And, a lot of things, there was a lot of conversation around colorism when it came to West Side Story. And I just wonder, how do we continue to highlight these things, but also push for the industry to change as a whole? Or is it ever going, are we going to see that in modern times right now? It doesn't feel like we are. It feels like we're just continuously having the same combos.
Yeah. Well, there are things that I didn't like about West Side Story, but they did make a concerted effort to change the portrayal of Puerto Ricans in the movie. And then, of course, you had Ariana Bose, who won the Academy Award and is black, Latina, and also openly queer. And so that was a bit of a step forward. You know, my
problem is that, you know, it's still the sort of brings up the images of stereotyping. And now here, this is a really, you know, what's different about this Fidel Castro thing is that we're not talking about urban Americans. You know, we're talking about a historical figure. And in a strange way, Fidel Castro, he came from a fairly well-off family of Spanish immigrants. And so some ways, it's not that far off from James Franco's life experience. But what's really bad about it, I think, is that, you know, James Franco, I'm sure, is not fluent in Spanish. And there's a lot of about the Latin American culture that white American actors can access and really portray, you know, in an authentic way.
Well, yeah, and then the fact that he'll need to put on an accent to play it, there's right. there could be problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing to remember, too, is that it's based on a memoir by his daughter who rejected the, you know, the system of government in Cuba. So I don't know how big that part is going to be. And it's also probably not going to make Fidel Castro look very good, that role.
Yeah.
So maybe they did it on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, thank
but,
you.
But that's a... You know, there's still a lot of problems, you know, as they talk about in the article. You know, the big problem is that the percentage of lead roles is way below the percentage of Latinos in the population. And that's always the way that we measure a problem of representation in entertainment.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation.
Sure.
Really appreciate it. Ed Morales,
oh, yeah.
Journalist, author, and professor. And then also, you have a book that you wrote. You're the author of Fantasy Island. And, oh, is that you? You have a book, right?
Yes, that's me.
Yes, I wanted to make sure.
It's right there. If you Google,
I wanted to make sure.
Also, Latinx, the new force in American politics and culture.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I always like to make sure I have
Congrats.
The right information. That book is called Fantasy Island, Colonialism, Exploitation, and the Betrayal of Puerto Rico. Check it out.
That's right.
Please.
Thank you.
Check it out. Of course. Anytime.
I hope you all, hope you all have fun reading those, too.
Yeah, thank you. You sound like a cool professor.
I know, right? I like him.
Yep. Well, next up, our world is getting increasingly noisier. How silence could actually help you and how to get more of it next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
In our noisy world, silence is more important than ever before. But the question is, how do you tap into silence when there's so much going on? You see
that's
the
silence.
Power in that?
That's silence, right?
I actually, here's the thing. As I get older, not to use the age card, the O card.
You, the way that you use the age card, you are probably convincing everyone that you're 65. And
as
you're not.
I mature or
and 65
evolve.
Isn't
you know, here's
old
the thing,
either.
It's not even about age.
I would say
I'll
85.
Add, as I mature and evolve, I actually really appreciate silence more than ever before. And like, yeah, this is distracting.
This because, is what you hear when you hear silence.
No, actually, there is nothing. Although I do love this sound. This is actually one of my favorite sounds to fall asleep
it's
to
like
or wake
calm
up
app.
To. Exactly. I love waking up to, and I guess this isn't silence, but like rain or just hearing like the wind
well,
or the water,
that's the thing.
The
I
ocean.
Feel like that is silence because
it's a
your,
form of silence.
It's outside of the environment that you're normally in. You're in the environment of just Mother Nature and the world, you know? Like, there's a silence.
It's
in
like
that.
There's not people asking me questions. There's not pings.
And you
it's
don't all, like silence here. I just realized that.
Which is funny.
We sit here in this studio and we could just be working and getting prepared for the show. And then you'll hear Shira like, ah!
Well, that's just me expressing myself.
And it's because you don't know how to sit in the silence.
Well, we'll see what a doctor says one day. But but no, here's the thing is, yeah, you're right. I can only work, like, I can't work in silence. Like, if I'm doing work, I need to be around kind of the noise, the white noise. Right, so it's like
a WeWork type of thing. You need to be in the community
or like
of others
a coffee shop.
Yeah.
No, I don't want people talking to me.
Okay.
And I can't have music playing in the background with words. I just literally need a beat, or like I used to do my work at college with in the laundry room because I like the sound of the.
Really?
Yes. It's only like white noise. I can't have the specific noise. I can't
so it's only white noise. Why I gotta be white?
So anyway, let's go back to the neuroscientists have discovered that certain kinds of quiet can improve our mental and physical health. This is why, like, at night when I'm going to bed, you know, I might have like the sound healing, the sound bowls. I can't go to bed with like TV or all that.
I can't go to bed with that or music. Sound bowls or things like that.
That I like. But also when I wake up, I do not want to hear news, sports. Don't put on any music. I actually, in the morning, I really enjoy silence.
Really?
Yeah.
See, for me, I think the way that I can like center myself is like I like having things in the background. Like you, ever since you know me, you know I can like literally multitask.
I know.
I can have things in my ear.
Be able to do that.
I can literally, and for me, that actually feels like comfortable. If I don't have like things kind of happening behind me, I do get a little nervous in the silence.
Yeah, because
especially when I'm by myself. But if I'm with a group of people, then I'm all right.
Silence with people is actually a bit nerve-wracking.
Silence with people, especially in friendships, that's how you know you have a good friend. If you can, like, especially like long car rides and y'all don't always have to talk or y'all don't always have to have something to talk about, like just being able to be silent with someone, that's how you know you have a good friend or a good partner.
Yes. I knew at the beginning of my relationship with my boyfriend, we went on a road trip like literally a month in.
Mm-hmm. Which is
wild.
And
it was so nerve-wracking to me to be silent. And I started judging it like maybe we're not interested in each other. Maybe it's not, you know, maybe we're not into it, blah, blah, blah. And now it's
that's
like.
That's all you want.
That's like how things change. Shut up. Actually, be quiet.